Welcome back to the Dobbies podcast. Today's episode is about caring for garden wildlife with the RSPB. I'm constantly on a mission to make my garden into a welcoming environment for wildlife, so I'm really looking forward to this podcast. I'm Louise Midgley, and I'm delighted to be joined by Ali Lemon, Conservation Officer at the RSPB, who is going to give us some ideas on the best ways we can all make our outdoor spaces more wildlife friendly, whatever their size. Welcome, Ali.
Thanks, Louise. It's lovely to be here.
The country's largest nature conservation charity, the RSPB, is inspiring everyone to give nature a home. And with just a little careful planning, we can all provide safe havens for the local wildlife to feed, breed and hibernate in our gardens. So Ali, perhaps you could tell us about your role at the RSPB and a little bit about the charity's fantastic work.
So my job title is Conservation Officer. So that entails doing quite a lot of a variety of things. But my main sort of bread and butter is replying to casework. So that's like developments coming in. So things like forestry, things like housing developments, wind farms. And then they'll come into us and we'll have a look at them and tell developers about the important wildlife that's in the area, how they could incorporate wildlife-friendly plans and things like that. So that's sort of the day-to-day stuff. And then I get out and do surveys. I deliver talks to local groups and things like that as well. So it's a real variety of things that I get to do in my day-to-day role. In terms of some of the really cool stuff that the RSPB has been up to recently, we have had our Bird Garden Birdwatch just a couple of weekends ago. And that's the biggest one we've had, the most people taking part ever. And the results will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out on that.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say I took part in that.
Ah, fab. That's lovely.
You could hear my brain working there. Yes, I went down first thing in the morning and there was a lovely green woodpecker on the lawn. So I thought, that's it. I'm starting now. that's my hour started. Because normally it always happens that you press your send button at the end of your hour and then a green woodpecker appears afterwards or something else, you know, finches or something come into the garden. You think, oh, I missed it.
Yeah, you see it on Twitter, you're like, it's ended, I had one blue tit, and then 5 minutes later you're like, the finches have turned up, the pigeons are here now. Yeah, it's always the way. They just seem to know. Some of the other exciting things that have come out from over the past year or so from the RSPB is the Tristan and Dacuna government have announced that they are going to create the largest no-take zone in the Atlantic. So that's covering 700,000 square kilometres. So that's a massive marine area protected, and the RSPB have been working with the community out there, the local government out there, and loads of other partners for over a decade now to create this really special place and this really important biodiversity hotspot for marine wildlife, for birds. Yeah, so there's a whole host of things now, hopefully going to do a lot better now thanks to that protected area.
So no 2 days are the same for you, are they? You have such a broad spectrum of interests.
Yeah, really variety of things. So I think one of the things that people don't realise is that RSPB, we don't just work in the UK, we do work internationally as well. So we work across all of the sort of the UK's overseas territories as well. We do a lot of work over there as well and provide help to other partners in other countries around the world as well. We've also got our nature recovery plan. And so the nature recovery plan is all about 11 big key asks that we're asking the Scottish Government, along with the Scottish Wildlife Trust and WWF Scotland. So things are like increasing the native tree cover in Scotland, ensuring peatlands are fully protected, and protecting the marine environment just as much as we're protecting the terrestrial environment. One of the other things, that a project that I found out about doing some research for this podcast, that the RSPB is launching in April, so I can't say an awful lot about it, but it's called Nature on Your Doorstep. And it's actually a wildlife gardening project that we're launching, as I said, in April. It's a massive 3-year project with funding from the Barrett Foundation, so the people at the Barrett Housing have provided the funding for that. So it's all about creating, like, giving people resources on how to create wildlife friendly gardens. But it's not just about people who have gardens, it's about getting people out to, like, any local green space that they've got as well, and working with local councils and communities. But also, like, balconies can be really important for wildlife as well, like providing that little hotspot and things. So yeah, it's a really big big one to keep an eye out for, especially for listeners to this podcast. I think it'd be a great thing for them to keep an eye out for in April when it launches.
Yes, sure, we'll do that. And have you always been interested in wildlife, and did that inspire your career choices?
My mum always says that when I was a little kid wandering around, she'd always like worry what she was going to find in my pockets, because I'd be out wandering around. She's like, I have no idea what's coming out this time. And we used to spend a lot of time on the west coast of Scotland as well, with family over at the coast there. Yeah, so we would do bird watching. My mum would point out like all the bird species that we'd be seeing. We'd spend hours rock pulling, wandering around the woods. And I guess I've always been really lucky that I been exposed to that from a really early age. Not everybody gets that chance. And it just really sparked the love of wildlife and nature for me. So I've been really fortunate. And like, it's kind of taken that weird uni through to like career progression not everybody gets to do. But yeah, I've been really lucky in what I've been able to achieve and what I've been able to work on. So yeah, my love for wildlife is definitely like, it's great to actually have a job where you can go in day in and day out and be like, I'm making a difference.
Yeah. And your mum really inspired you by telling you the names of birds, because I don't think necessarily children, you know, in a lot of houses know what the names of all the birds are that they see in their gardens.
No, that's very true. There's been a lot of research come out recently, and it's all about how kids nowadays have lost like what an adder is or what a bluebill is or what an acorn is, like these meanings of these words that just come naturally to like maybe older generations or people that have been exposed to it at a young age. As you said, like, my, like, not everybody has a mum that would be interested in nature or wildlife. I was really lucky to have that. And it's a real shame, but there's organisations like the RSPB and others trying to combat that and trying to get more people outside and get them a bit muddy, get them a bit dirty.
Yes, and I think they really enjoy it. And I mean, children in primary schools do gardening now as part of the curriculum, not necessarily a secondary school, but certainly when they're younger, they do it, which is really, you know, fantastic, because they'll be identifying all sorts of creatures in their garden plots at school.
Yeah, it's lovely to see as well. And like when you walk past, it's not just concrete playgrounds anymore. There's gardening, there's trees and things. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're growing produce, which is wonderful.
Yeah. It's an amazing couple of projects happening across the UK.
And Ali, what sort of wildlife should we all be looking out for now in our gardens? So certainly during spring and summer anyway.
So spring is on its way. Sun is on its way. The blue skies are coming. You'll notice like the snowdrops are out. So that's really the first sort of sign that things are changing. The wildlife knows that the warmer days are on their way. So you'll get things like that. You'll see crocuses starting to come up. You'll see lesser celandines starting to come through as well. And these are the sort of first wildflowers that you're going to start seeing appearing in wild areas, or if you've got them in your garden as well. You'll start hearing the birds calling. You start to hear the birds singing in your garden. So that's them telling people, I'm here now, this is going to be my territory, and like setting up those sort of those walls between other territories and just telling their mates, I'm here, I've got a nice patch, come and see it. After you've got the birds calling, you'll start seeing them build nesting sort of towards like March time. And yeah, and then that's when the breeding gets going. The past couple of days, if on Twitter and things, bumblebee sightings have started picking up as well. So they'll drop off now again because we've got some bad weather. But you'll start seeing the really big queens coming out, and they'll be flying around looking for some of that really needed energy, some of that like nectar and pollen for them to build up those energies before they go off and try and find some places to nest. One of my favourites is looking for frog spawn and toad spawn. So let's say it's one of those things that you used to do as a kid. You'd go and collect some frog spawn and then you'd take it inside and then you'd watch it develop. And it's amazing to like look at them all as their little legs appear and things like that. And this has started happening already. So there's a frog spawn watch run by the Freshwater Habitats Trust run it. And you can go on and you can pinpoint where all the frog spawn's appearing in the country. So at the minute it's in Cornwall and Southern Wales, and then it will start spreading further and further up.
Fantastic. And what about as we go into summer, what can we look out for then?
So in summer, you'll start seeing birds like coming, like, so they'll be flying out back in from their nest, and they'll be collecting like insects to feed their chicks. So you can keep an eye on it, and you can try and see if you've got some nesting pairs in your garden. So then you can go along to the pond. If you've got like a pond in your local area or a pond in your garden, you'll start noticing those start coming to life a bit more. So you'll start seeing some newts coming along and starting to lay their eggs as well. Frogs developing, as I said, the spawn developing, dragonflies and damsels. Flies appearing. And then you'll also start seeing more butterflies, you'll start seeing more insects flying around, so the beetles, more bees, so like some solitary bees will start appearing as well. And it's just that buzz, that like that noise, that like orchestra of wildlife noises that you start hearing. Yeah, it's just it's the things that get ecologists through, is knowing that that's coming.
Yes, so much to look forward to.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, and just the noise and the colours that you see, and the flowers coming out and things like that, and the meadows appearing. So yeah, it's a really beautiful time of year.
Well, I spend a lot of time peering into the plants in my border. I mean, you just can't walk past. You can't have blinkers on. You've got to actually look, you know, because you might see some dayfly moths like Jersey tiger moths, or you might see some longhorn beetles or something. If you walk straight past, you're not going to see them. But if you're actually looking carefully, or if you're just gardening as well, that's when you can see lots of wildlife.
It's one of the best times, is just to sit and stop, and like you get distracted. People don't like going for walks with me because like you'll get like 2-3 meters and I'm like, oh, there's something over here, and there's something over here.
Me too. There's always this lichen, there's fungi, so much to look at all the time. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's just beautiful. Yeah, it's lovely.
I love it. Well, some people may assume that a wildlife-friendly garden needs to be completely untamed and untidy, but that doesn't have to be the case at all. What would be your top tips for creating a garden that can be shared with wildlife?
There is this sort of conception that a wild area needs to be left alone and it's not managed. And that's not always the case. There is management that goes into creating some a nice wildlife garden. So my top tips for creating it would be like have a variety of habitats. So like have your meadows, you can have your ponds, but also having like different shapes and heights of trees. So you've got some shrubs, you've got some trees as well, like some larger trees as well. Depending on the space you've got, it's just about providing that sort of mosaic, that different those different shapes, those different habitats and things for the wildlife to take advantage of. Also, it's about providing sort of a food source throughout the year. So this is mainly focused on invertebrates and the pollinators that do that amazing, important job for us. So it's about providing that early sort of season food source all the way through to the end of the season, sort of towards September, October time, just so they've got something to look for. And then if you've got your insects, you've got your birds coming in to look for food and things as well. And if you can, like, leave little areas that are untidy. So everybody thinks my wildlife garden has to be all of my garden, but it doesn't. It can be little spaces. If you've only got a little corner, I don't know, it's behind the garage and you don't really look at it all that often, leave it alone a little while, build a log pile down there and that sort of thing. So it's just about providing resources and habitats throughout the year for a different variety of species.
That's great advice. So I left a bit of a lawn unmowed, and actually I did plant some little plug plants of wildflowers into it, and that was absolutely amazing. There were so many insects in that, I couldn't believe it. And also water features are quite good, I think, for attracting all sorts of wildlife, because they can come and have a drink from it. You know, small mammals and birds will drink from it, and then you've got toads and frogs which will eat your slugs in the garden, which is fantastic.
Natural predator control is the way to go. Water features are incredibly important, and I know so it can be little ponds, it can be big ponds, it just depends on the space that you've got. So we do that. You can do this thing called a bucket pond, and basically that's like an old washing up bowl that you kind of bury almost all the way into the ground, and you can fill that with water. Make sure you've got some stones going in out of it so anything can get in and out if they fall in. But also, some people worry about grandkids or kids falling into ponds, so you can do a thing called a bog garden. So it's basically you take like pond liner and you stab it with a fork and you put like holes in it, and then you put some soil on top, and then that will hold the water, but it will drain away as well, so it retains some of the water, so you still got that water source and things, and you can get some nice water like tolerant plants in there as well.
You get dragonflies and all sorts visiting.
Yeah, exactly.
And the wonderful thing about native plants is in hedges is that they do attract lots of wildlife. You get lots of birds nesting in there. And also, you know, when you have a really, really windy day, they never blow down because the wind just filters straight through them. So there's a lot to be said for a hedge, natural hedge.
There's a lot to be said for a lot like hedges like that, especially like if you have hawthorn or blackthorn or things in there.
Yeah.
They provide food sources for wildlife as well as nesting habitats. And as you said, that you don't have like there's not that worry about as well maintenance as much. Yes, you'll have to maintain it and you'll have to cut it and maintain it stuff, but you're not worrying about, do I have to paint it this year? Is it going to blow down in that storm? As you said, it's a really important point for ivy because they flower later on from about September to November. If you've got any ivy in your garden, and if you can leave it, then it's a great source for late invertebrates that are flying about around, so the species are still hanging on.
Not everyone has a large garden alley, but they may well be interested in caring for wildlife in their small plot. What sort of tips could you give those people? What can they do?
Yeah, so it's not always about how much space you've got. It's just always providing, you can still provide the same things for wildlife if you've only got a small garden or if you've got a balcony and things. So a little pot with some wildflowers in it, so it doesn't have to be vast areas, just a little thing in the corner. So it's about providing that network of habitats. So even though you've not got a lot of space, that a bee might discover your ox-eye daisy or your cowslip or something in this in one of your pot plants. And that could be that little saviour, that little energy boost that it needs to get it back to the hive, or that like little energy boost that it needs to find a mate. You can also provide, depending on the area that you're in, birds. Well, if there's shelter and things for them, if you're backing onto areas, you can still feed birds on your balcony and stuff. Yeah, so it's just providing whatever you feel comfortable with, going up walls and things like that. And yeah, providing a mixture of habitats in the space that you've got.
I spend hours watching the birds in my garden, especially when they've taken up residence in my bird boxes, which I'm hoping they will do again this year. What advice could you give us on caring for wild birds in our gardens?
Some of the best things to do is sort of provide year-round habitat for them, and providing, and if you can, providing food sources for them. So it can be natural food sources. I know some people don't always want to feed birds in their garden, but you can provide it through things like if you've got a hedge with hawthorn, with blackthorn, if you've got rowan trees, things like that, they'll provide berry sources. But they'll also attract in pollinators and other insects during summer. Also providing nesting habitats, like natural nesting habitats. So providing, that mosaic of habitats, the little shrubs. Some birds like to nest near their ground, some are higher up. So if you can provide that sort of mosaic of habitats, those different sizes of shrubs and trees and hedges and things, then yeah, you're going to attract the birds into your garden. So there's also water sources are really important. So bird baths, also natural things like ponds or bucket ponds or bog gardens and things. They'll all be used by birds for drinking and for bathing. And it means you're trying to provide this sort of one-stop shop for the birds to come into your garden. They want to come here and think, I'm at a 5-star resort, I don't need to go elsewhere. And then they can stay in your garden. They've got their food, they've got their water, they've got their shelter. So providing a variety of habitats again in your garden. So creating meadows again and that will attract in other insects, which the birds will then feed to their chicks. And then you can also grow things like teasel and things like that, and that's really good for finches, and they'll come along and pick out the seeds in the winter. You can also provide artificial things, so as you were saying, your nest boxes, and they can be a great way to attract birds into your garden as well. Different species need different things, and there's loads of resources online about what sort of birds you might get in your garden and the sort of places to position them. So robins, for example, like open boxes, then you've got your sort of typical box you'd expect, nest box with the little hole in the front. You'll get things like blue tits coming into that. You can also provide a thing called a sparrow terrace nest box. So basically it's like 3 nest boxes stuck together, because sparrows like to nest sort of in colonies and things, and they'll put up with each other. So then you can get more than one family in, and it's quite nice to see that, and seeing the fledglings coming out and stuff. Also, it's really important to note that there is cleaning and maintenance with these things. So cleaning your bird feeders every sort of fortnight is really important to stop diseases building up. So I think it was around about 2006, we saw a decline in greenfinches throughout the UK, and that was because a disease had come in and it had started going through the finch population. And one of the ways that it was passed on was through bird feeders, and it was just because people hadn't realised that you need to clean them and maintain them, because that way you got your bird feeder and you can get some food really stuck down the bottom and you're like, I can't get you out. That's just a growing ground for bacteria and viruses and things. So it's really important that you keep those clean, and also bird baths and things if they're being used as well, just keeping them clean. It's like anything, we clean our own dishes and things. It's the same for the birds. We wouldn't want to pass anything on. So that's one of the key things, is all that ongoing maintenance.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't actually think many people realise they have to clean their bird feeders, because they just hang them up and they just keep on filling them up and filling them up, and they just don't think about it. It doesn't occur to them necessarily. They probably think when it rains it washes them or whatever, but they do need to be clean with some sort of detergent or something.
Yeah, so you can go on, if you go on the RSPB website or the BTO website and things, they've got suggestions of what cleaners. There's certain things that are animal wildlife friendly that you can use. They're not expensive disinfectants and stuff, but it's important to get the right one, because a wildlife will be consuming the food that you put in it. So you need to make sure you're getting those wildlife friendly cleaners.
And Ali, if you want to attract birds, the other thing that's quite important, I think, is to get lots of moths and butterflies in your garden, because blue tits in particular feed, I don't know how many thousands of caterpillars to their young, don't they? It's amazing.
It's an incredible thing, the amount you actually think about and the habitat that they live on. Because I guess when we wander through forests and things, we don't see it. We're not looking for it.
No, exactly.
But they're there. They're experts at it. They know where to go and find these little caterpillars, these little grubs that they feed to their young. But yeah, you're in totally right. And that's with the meadows and things of attracting in wildlife through insects. They'll then lay their eggs and things in the sort of local vicinity. And then that again helps feed those chicks as they are growing.
I've got a nice little clump of nettles, which is growing increasingly large.
Lovely, yeah.
but honestly, small tortoiseshell butterflies, and I think peacock butterflies.
Peacock butterfly as well, yeah.
Laid their eggs, and they were just literally crawling with caterpillars. It was unbelievable. I filmed it, I photographed it. I was so excited. It was just so lovely to see, because hopefully they didn't all get eaten.
Yeah. Well, some will get away. That's their thing, though. They know they have to lay loads of eggs and have loads of young to survive in the natural environment. So I'm sure some got away. But it's amazing that you've got some nettles. I know not everybody's a fan, but it's amazing, just that little simple plant, the amount, what species will make use of it.
And Ali, by now most people are probably aware that the population of many pollinating insects, including bees, is in serious decline. How can we all do something to protect them?
It's about what you use in your garden and like what habitats you you can provide in your garden as well. Leave areas of your lawn uncut. So let the wild, natural wildflowers, as you were saying, let the wildflowers come through and plant it up with some bulbs, with some native bulbs if you're wanting. And that can be a really nice way of increasing the biodiversity value of a lawn. Also like raising how much you're cutting your lawn. So if you don't cut it as short, and then you'll get this sort of nice carpet of clovers and things coming through, which are really good nectar sources for wildlife. But also, so nesting habitats as well. When everybody thinks about bees, they think about honeybees. But obviously, there's a huge variety of species out there. So there's bumblebees. There's about 24 species of them in the UK. We've got about 250 species of solitary bees. And these are the sort of the bees that really do most of our pollinating for us. Bumblebees will nest in hives of a couple of hundred individuals, and they'll nest in tussocks of grass and long grass and things like that. And then solitary bees, as you imagine, they are solitary and they only like come to lay their eggs. So you might have seen, people might have seen these bamboo cane sort of bee homes. Solitary bees will use them. So then some species will go in and they'll go in, they'll lay their eggs, then they'll build a little wall, and then they'll lay another egg, then they'll build another little wall. And that's the sort of, they are the species that you're providing a home for through that. There's also log piles are really important for things like beetles. If you keep it in a dark sort of damp corner, the larger ground beetles, they'll use that for their larvae. But if you have it out in the sort of hot sun and things, and solitary bees will use that as well. If you drill some holes into it, they'll lay their eggs in that as well. So it's about providing like food sources for them through nectar sources. So throughout the year, dandelions, one of the best plants that you can actually have, like a really good early nectar source for pollinators. So even if it's a small patch that you've got of it, or if it's even if you just plant up like small plant pot with some wildflowers, that's also great as well. And then also providing that nesting habitat, actually providing like a small patch of bare ground is really good for a variety of invertebrates as well. So again, some solitary bees like to bury into bare ground. They're really important areas, providing that sort of breadth of habitats, that breadth of places that they can go, places that they can lay their eggs, places that they can forage for themselves, and places for their young when they hatch out to also forage as well.
And that's a great idea when you said about a pot of wildflowers, or that would be really useful for someone who lives in a flat and has just a balcony, or just has a small garden, a small patio, and they haven't got much space, but they want to encourage wildlife into their garden.
It's not always necessarily about converting the whole thing into a wildlife friendly garden, although that's amazing if you can. I think there's 23 million gardens in the UK or something. And if you take the whole vast area of that, it's over 4,000 square kilometres in space. So like that's nearly the size of the Cairngorms National Park, for example. Yeah. And so if everybody just did a little bit, if everybody just did that little flower pot, if everybody just did that little bucket pond, and you provide that network of areas, those sort of stepping stones for bees to go to, then we're creating this fabulous network through our urban, basically urban concrete jungles that can be like our homes in some cases, and it can provide those networks through to the sort of countryside and to the parks and things where there might be better habitat. But if you've got the space and you've got the time and you've got the will to make your garden a wildlife haven as well, then go for it. It could be one of those hubs. But it's all about just everybody doing a little bit, and that makes sure that we can help not just our birds and not just our pollinators, but also our other wildlife as well.
And also, I just think the verticals of a garden, if you've got a small space, are really important. So you can grow honeysuckle upwards. You know, you can train it up a fence, or you can just put some poles up and train it along the poles to use. You know, you don't have to worry about having a little bit of ground space, but you can go upwards instead.
Yeah, like up fences and things as well. That's a great way to go if you've not got a lot of space, as you were saying.
And the wider the diversity of creatures that visit your garden, the less likely you are to have problems with large numbers of pests. But if you do get an infestation of aphids or unwelcome red lily beetles, how would you recommend getting rid of them?
So we always say stay away from the pesticides and things like that, because they can have a knock-on effect. Although they might directly deal with the issue there and then, if you wipe out your aphids, you wipe out your natural predators as well. So your ladybirds, as I was saying, your lacewings. And then again, those knock-on effects, they have effects on birds, which control those species. And slugs and things are also a favourite of things like hedgehogs. Although the aphids might reduce instantly, they'll come back. They're just going to come back. They will find your plants again. So we always try and advise using a natural predator, like a predator system. If you want your aphids controlled, you want to attract things like ladybirds and lacewings and hedgehogs. beetles for slugs and snails into your, and thrushes as well, into your garden. They'll do the job for you. They naturally want, like, it's their prey. They'll naturally hunt them out. There are also things you can grow, like sacrifice crops, like
nasturtiums.
That's the one. So you can grow them, and they're a really good activity to do with kids as well. So they grow quite easily.
Big seeds, so they germinate quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really useful in that way. And insects love them. Like, they'll attract lots of aphids and things to them. And you can use that as a sacrifice plant, and then that in turn hopefully protects what you're trying to grow, whether it's veg or things in your garden as well.
And do you have any advice on how we can manage our gardens during autumn and winter?
So autumn and winter, it's kind of the tidy up period. So we always advise leaving things alone until this sort of period. So if you've got nest boxes, for example, sort of autumn, winter's the time to clear them out if you want to, and disinfect them and things. There's a legal aspect to that as well. So you can't disturb nesting birds. It's from August in Scotland in September up until January. That's the period you have to clear out your nest boxes. So get rid of any. And that's if there's any eggs in it. It's just so you're not disturbing any unhatched eggs and things like that. And then during that period, it's legal to move them in to get rid of them. Yeah, so it's just clean out your nest boxes, get rid of the old nesting material, and just giving it a disinfect, a clean. So you don't need to use any chemicals or anything on it. Just pour some boiling water over it, give it a good clean, and let it air dry, and then get it back up for the next season. Some of the other things you can do, so sometimes ponds can get quite built up if they're left. So if they're under trees, or if you've got yellow flag iris and things, they can be quite domineering plants. So that's the time to clear out the bottom and things, but make sure if you're doing that you leave the piles at the side of the pond. That just gives anything that's in there, so hibernate, so you'll get frogs that might hibernate in the bottom of ponds, but you'll also get any inverts that are in there as well, and it'll give them their chance to get out. So as you're coming into autumn, if you've decided to have a meadow in your garden, you want to really try and only do one cut a year. But the important thing is that you take that cut away. You don't want to leave it there and let it, because wildflower meadows need low nutrients. So you want to take all the cuttings away, and then it means that next year you'll get this lovely meadow coming back. If you want to put any annuals in there, like poppies and things, you can just scrape bits away and put that seed in just at the right time of year in the new year. So it's kind of the management phase and sort of the time to get things ready again for that exciting period that is spring and summer.
And I always think perhaps not to rake leaves, fallen leaves off the lawn, because otherwise the lawn will die, but leave them on the borders, because being a gardener, I've come across so many little frogs and newts, right under just a fairly thick pile of leaves, and I'll be just moving them. Perhaps I try not to take them away, and there's a newt, and I think, oh, quick, put it back. So they do hibernate under leaves. And if you can just, and then the worms will take them down into the soil in any case over winter. And if there's any left in the spring, you can just clear them out then.
Yeah, and then just put them in your compost.
And same, I think, for seed heads on perennials, if you can leave those, like you said about the teasels.
Yeah, teasels and things, and it's really good for a food source as well. Yeah.
Thanks, Ali. I've loved chatting to you about caring for garden wildlife, and you've certainly given us plenty to think about.
No, it's been great. Thanks for having me along today. And it's been really fun to chat to you about all the wildlife and the gardening tips as well. Thank you.
Oh, well, hopefully we can do it again soon. But that is all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to visit the RSPB website and follow them on social media to find out more about their wonderful work. And visit dobbies.com for more podcasts and heaps of gardening advice and inspiration. Stay tuned for the next podcast, which is coming soon.